Welcome. This is Bill Roberts, and this is CART.ca with the second installment of our podcast with Ian Scott, Chair of the CRTC, the Canadian Radio Television Telecommunications Commission.
Sometimes I think politicians, catch institutions in contradictions. We talked about contradictions earlier. And one of them that I want to ask you about is, you seem to be caught between two ministerial policy directives, one from Minister Bernier in 2006 and another from Minister Baines in, well, this year, as you said, 2019. Baines wants to drive down the cost of cell phone and internet bills for the consumer, and Bernier put, if I understand him correctly, a lot of emphasis on market forces and investments. So are those two things reconcilable? I guess you're doing that. You are reconciling them.
It makes me think of the first question you asked me during this podcast. That's exactly what we have to do. And I don't see a problem. It's not different than the list of, if you will, competing objectives. Both of the policy directions can only emphasize the elements that are contained in the Act. They're not legally permitted to say, thou shalt do something that isn't in the list. So really what they're saying is, as the regulator, we want you to weigh heavily on certain provisions. Now we have two of them, and they both directions relate to the objectives of the Act. To be perfectly honest, we always weigh all of the objectives. That, again, is what we do. It's the nature of the work as a regulator.
Fair enough. Just switch temporarily over to the broadcasting side again, which is my terra firma more than telecom. Mm. How are we doing in the Canadian broadcasting system? Do you have a sense of how we're doing?
I guess it depends on who you ask, which player you're speaking to. The Harnessing Change report does something interesting, and again, I'm not trying to sell the commission's wares, but I really encourage your audience to go have a look at it at the CRTC site. We tried first to develop a factual base on which to base our observations and commentary, and so we looked at the various sectors and ultimately characterized them in different ways. And you can see in that that some sectors do better than others. I'll give you two quick examples. Radio. Radio is in overall decline in terms of revenues, as is most of the broadcasting sector. But their revenues have not gone down as much. I think the most likely explanation for that is that radio tends to be hyper-local. And perhaps the big online advertising dollars that go to companies like Facebook and Google and are being lost by television broadcasters in terms of national advertising, it hasn't hit radio as hard. Still hit them, there's no doubt about that. And so the overall pie has grown slightly with the introduction of over-the-top radio players. But radio has fared reasonably well. When you look at conventional television broadcasters who were much more dependent on those national advertising dollars, they've been hurt the most. Back to my point earlier, who's benefited the most? Canadians have just an incredible array of content available to them. That's a good thing. No, and that's not going to change. The internet's not going away. Services being delivered over the internet are not going away. They're only going to intensify. And that's okay. I mean, I think these are good things. What we need to do is to figure out how to even things out, to make sure that everyone is making a contribution and that contribution makes sense, because they're not all the same. Trying to figure out what kind of contribution an Amazon should or could make to the system isn't the same thing as trying to figure out what Quebecor, who produces original French language content that's highly desirable and watched by Francophone Quebecers. So there are different needs and there are different solutions. What I think we need to do is be given the flexibility to figure out a better way.
I like what you're saying there. The notion of the appropriate contribution, here's a kind of a mechanics question. So if BDUs are in general challenged mode and maybe a bit of decline with cord cutting, et cetera, and their revenues are sliding, how do we fund Canadian content on the broadcasting side if there's less resources from the BDUs available for the Canada Media Fund?
That's a tricky question. I'd say $64,000 question, but it's much bigger than that. The amount of money that goes to support the Canadian broadcasting system is considerable. So first, let's put aside the public broadcaster. It obviously receives public money and is a very important element of that picture, but we'll put that aside for a second. In terms of cable providers and others, yes, you're right. It's one of the financial drivers. Not only is advertising revenue going away, subscription revenue is going down with cable cutting or trimming. And so there's a challenge there. To date, governments have backstopped some of that funding to make sure things like the Canada Media Fund has sufficient funds available to it to continue to support it. And that clearly is a possible approach in the future, but that would be subject to changes in political priorities and so on. So for many, it's not the most desirable outcome. It could continue on the current path where you figure out a way to have various new providers, I'll call them, or non-traditional providers, make similar contributions. The Commission, in its Harnessing Change report, pointed out another possible way. We identified a possible contribution that comes from broadband subscriptions. The simple fact of the matter is that I think currently the statistics are over 60% of all of the wireline broadband bits and bytes traffic are for video. Over 25% of all mobile traffic is video. So it's not a difficult conclusion to reach that perhaps broadband providers might play a role in supporting that. We did a, call it a back of the envelope calculation, and we said if you applied a 1% contribution on those broadband connections, it would basically finance or replace those financial supports that exist today through the BDU contributions, through broadcasting expenditures. So that would be another possible way of looking at it. I'm not saying that's the right way. It may or may not be accepted by parliamentarians, but I'm happy that there is a debate going on because the key consideration is if you want to have Canadian content, it requires financial support.
I like that approach. It's important to all of us as Canadians right now, the notion of truth and reconciliation and Indigenous voices in this country. Where is the Commission at with regard to its activities that support truth and reconciliation?
I'm really glad you asked that. One of the things we have underway, we're actually are engaging in some, I'll explain in a second, but preliminary consultations with Indigenous broadcasters and creators and, I guess, audience about a new Indigenous broadcast policy. We actually have a policy that has been around, it's over 20 years. It's named the Native Broadcasting Policy, which gives you a sense of how out of date it is. And we have launched consultations to discuss with Indigenous communities how they wish to see us consult with them. Then we will hold a more traditional consultation, put out a notice of consultation, and get views from not only Indigenous Canadians, but other interested parties. And then we'll go back to the those Indigenous communities and say, how do you find, you know, is this a acceptable policy framework in terms of whether or not it impacts any of their rights? So we're actively engaged in that. Beyond that, I think there's a much greater sensitivity inside the Commission to Indigenous, as there is, I think, among all Canadians, to all matters Indigenous. We have certainly, along with my commissioner colleagues, we had a little retreat where we invited in Indigenous advisors to share with us their perspective, so we would be a little better educated. You probably know that we had recently the last, call them new commissioner, Claire Anderson, our commissioner for the Yukon and British Columbia, is Indigenous, and we welcome her to the commission and the perspectives that she brings as a young Indigenous person, and that for that young Indigenous person from the North, we hit the trifecta on that one, and her perspectives will be invaluable. And at the staff level, we're simply doing more. We have an Indigenous champion who I point out is not an Indigenous person, but is running workshops inside the commission, staff luncheons where they are sharing their learnings and understanding, so that we, like any public policy practitioner, have a fulsome perspective, have a full or better, I will never have a full understanding, a better understanding of an Indigenous perspective and the needs and wants of Indigenous people in Canada.
Very good. You referenced public broadcasting by taking it out of an earlier answer, by saying set public broadcasting aside. Let me come back to it and put public broadcasting as my next question then.
Sure.
What are your thoughts about the preferred or modern role for public broadcasters, not just our national public broadcaster, Radio-Canada, CBC, but Télé-Québec, TV Ontario, TFO, Knowledge Network? Where do they fit in your media scape?
Wow, that's a weighty question, one that may be beyond my pay grade. You know what? Public broadcasters are critical. If for no other reason, then they are and should be beyond reproach in terms of their integrity. We talked earlier about what do you do about truthful news sources. Well, one of the things you do is support public broadcasting, whether it be at a provincial or national level. And clearly, CBC, Radio-Canada fits squarely in that space. They are, if not the most trusted, one of the most trusted sources of news. Being a public broadcaster, you know, we turn to them with some assurance that's earned by them that the news is balanced and fair and accurate. So that's a critically important role that public broadcasters play. Secondly, we talked about how do we ensure Canadian stories are written, produced, distributed. Well, what better vehicle in terms of traditional media and increasingly new media, digital platforms, what better source than the public broadcaster? It's an important element of all of their work and one which helps ensure that those stories do indeed get told and found by Canadians. Okay. So I think they are incredibly important to the system, and not very long from now we'll be looking at the CBC much more CBC Radio-Canada, pardon me, much more closely.
Okay. All of these questions and issues in are, as you say, complex, and there's a huge balancing act. You know, it must be a bit lonely sometimes. Do you ever get a chance to, as chair of our regulatory body, the CRTC, do you ever get a chance to sit down and, you know, have a meal, meet with, you know, your counterparts like, you know, Ajit Pai at the FCC, or, you know, Sharon White at Ofcom. Do you ever get is there ever an opportunity? Is there something out there that I just don't know about that gets the heads of these regulatory bodies together once a year, as long as it's not on a cruise boat?
Well, I think you have a better idea. I have been doing that, but we haven't been doing it on a cruise boat. So
good.
I'm sure Canadian taxpayers will appreciate that. It's very important. And yes, we do. We do have a dialogue. One of the organizations that I referenced earlier, the International Institute of Communications, holds an annual forum, a closed-door forum of regulators. And that's followed by an open policy conference. And it's held in London every second year and then in another location on the opposite year, odd year. And it is a very useful fora to be able to sit and meet and have a dialogue with regulators from around the world. But in particular, to be completely candid, with what you might call the leading regulators, the ones that are most like the CRTC and those that confront many of the same issues. So you mentioned Ms. White, who is actually stepping down at the end of this year, and Ajit Pai, who's also the Australian regulator. And yes, I have a dialogue with all of them. I think it's important. I think the CRTC is a world-class regulator, but there is always room for improvement. We can learn from our international colleagues. We confront many of the same issues. We also try and formalize those where possible. We're a signatory, like a cooperation agreement with BEREC, which is the European telecommunications regulators who all work together to implement European government rules. So we have meetings with them. So yes, we're active in that regard. We hope to learn best practices and share what we believe are some of our best practices. And it's very fruitful, and I think it's very important. You can't be insular because the challenges we face are global.
Yeah, cool. On the broadcasting side, is there one issue that you, Australia, Ofcom, FCC, that comes to mind?
What to do about over-the-top players more than anything? And almost of equal standing, how do you ensure truth in news?
Okay, good. Just coming back to cribbing from the Broadcasting Act, is there a lot of conversation and deliberation at the Commission on topics like Canadian culture, Canadian democracy? Are they sort of first principle considerations, or are they things that we need to address because we'll be asked about them?
I think those are the broad issues in the Act that we have to consider every time we look at the more narrow focused issues. So I'm trying to think off the top of my head of an example. If you look at something like mandatory carriage of an ethnic program, of ethnic programming, I should say, then we have to go, well, is this important? Is it important to have services in languages other than English and French or Indigenous language that meets the needs of new Canadians from different cultures? Is it important that it come from Canadian sources and not just foreign sources? And the answer to those are yes, but we have to ask ourselves why. And then you have to ask yourself some hard economic questions like, well, should it be mandatory to carry those? And who would be the best fighter? And we did one of those earlier this year, and awarded such a license. So it's always part of what we do. It's not so much a broad policy discussion about how can we support Canadian culture. What we do day to day, issuing licenses, ensuring that Canadian content rules are followed, that money flows to the creation and support of Canadian musicians and their music. those are all things that contribute to those objectives. So we kind of look at it, if you will, from the bottom up rather than the top down.
Okay, good. So this is an existential question, but not a tough one.
Those are usually the hardest.
No, I don't think it's going to be. I think you probably get asked this, you know, on occasion anyway. In a world that's surrounded by those fangs, you know, the Facebooks and, you know, Apples and Alphabets and Netflix and Googles, those digital giants, increasingly powered by artificial intelligence, 5G and other technologies. And those technologies are racing at light speed. I mean, they're changing that digital landscape, you know, as we sit here. How does and I say this respectfully, how does an institution like the Commission keep up? Is there a robust role for regulatory bodies like the Commission in the indefinite future? And is, you know, how does a regulator stay meaningful and regulate our media and communication environment when if I open up my smartphone after this interview, things could have changed completely.
They could. And it's important that regulators and governments understand how technology is changing and what are the implications of that change. And that's always a challenge, but certainly a doable one. You really ask, though, just regulation, can it work in that environment or should it work? The answer is absolutely yes. I think about it, this may sound like I'm as old as I am. It sounds like the thing you tell your children is like,
my grandchildren.
Why do we have to have all these rules? And it's like, because without rules, there'll be chaos and you'll get hurt. And so we need some rules, and they need to be fair. And they need to be logical, and they shouldn't be burdensome, and we should only make rules where they're needed. But we need rules, and that's what regulation is. And so I'll go back to the question you asked about truth in news. It's not the Commission only addresses it with respect to licensed broadcasters. But if there are no rules around it, then what will you do? How will you know what to trust? It's not to say it's a perfect model, but it's a necessary model, and we do our best to harness technology, to understand technological change, and then to use it. You mentioned the use of artificial intelligence and algorithms. So one can look at that and go, oh my gosh, that's going to undermine the Canadian broadcasting system. I can turn that around and look at it from a glass half full perspective and say, that can be the savior of Canadian broadcasting, because we can use algorithms to help find Canadian stories, to identify Canadian artists, not just domestically, but globally. So it's really a glass half empty, glass half full kind of analogy, and I'm kind of glass half full sort of guy.
Is there a brainiac department in the Commission that's keeping track of all this stuff, that, you know, cutting edge technologies?
I think some 400 dedicated public servants.
good answer.
We have a top world class staff. And that goes across the board. And I don't mean just the people who think about weighty policy issues or the engineers that understand complex technology. It also means the administrative staff that makes everything move, the decision writers who write, you know, top class, world class decisions in terms of their clarity and purpose. So it is a finely tuned machine, and I say that in all honesty. I think it's a world class regulator, and that's made up of a world class staff. It's a heck of a lot easier to make good decisions when they're presented in such an informed and polished way by staff.
Yeah, good. We're coming down to our last two questions. This next question sort of dovetails or is a bookend to the first question I think I asked. That is, when you accepted this job, did you have a clear idea, or did you think you had a clear idea about what your tenure as chair should accomplish. And if you did, have you modified those thoughts, or do you think you're on track, or, you know?
I got asked a similar question when I began by almost every media outlet in the country, and that was, what's your vision? And my answer at the time was, I don't have one. And staff are saying, you should say that. It sounds like you're clueless. And I went, I know, not clueless. It's not preordained. What we have to do are deal with the issues that are in front of us, or the government puts in front of us, or stakeholders, or consumers. And then it's a process that I described earlier. Then it's, okay, that's the issue. How do we go about addressing it? Develop the record, get staff's advice, make good decisions. And that's what I expected on the policy side. I've been around the industry, around government, essentially all my career. So I knew all about that plumbing. And happy to be a participant in it. The CEO side, just being outside of government, coming back in, there's a lot to learn in terms of various government policies, all of which are properly intended to protect taxpayers, the interest of Canadian citizens from another perspective. And I appreciate that. But it's very different than the private sector, where you're simply bottom line oriented. I'll add one thing, which is something I think I talked about to the panel that interviewed me before I was appointed, and that's the importance of public service and public sector work. One of the classic interview questions, why do you want this job? And my answer, in part, and it sticks with me because it is what I think about often, it's because it's way more interesting and important to look at issues from a public interest and public policy perspective than it is from a private or shareholder interest perspective. It's not one's more important than the other. They're very different. And the private sector has a very simple task. It is, they are there to protect and promote the interest of their shareholders. And so all of the public policy issues are shaded, or worked, if you will, to achieve those objectives. And so it should be. That's their job. But it's not very exciting, and it's not very intellectually stimulating, and maybe not so spiritually rewarding as actually sitting down and going, what's the right answer? What is best for Canada? What is best for Canadians? What's the right decision? That's infinitely more interesting. And to get to do that every day is all the reward I think you'd ever want.
A really good answer. Okay, so this is the last question. And it's one where you get to do what you want to do.
Who wrote that down? Wait, I'm looking forward to this.
What have I not asked you about that I should have asked you about that's really important for you to get off your chest and to share with the folks at CART.ca? Or what's the takeaway you want these listeners to have, you know, when they say, I listen to this, and, you know, when they talk with their coworkers or families or friends? What do you want them to hold on to from our chat today?
I'm going to answer in two parts. Because the first part is just something we didn't talk about, and I'll repeat it a bit at the very end. We didn't talk about unsolicited communications. And it's one of the areas that I don't think people associate the CRTC with it as much as they do traditional broadcasting and telecommunications regulation. It's a huge problem. It's a massive problem. It's an international problem, and it affects all Canadians. And they're frustrated by it, as are governments around the world and the enforcement agencies. Something like 25% of the calls in Canada on your mobile device are unsolicited. Many of them fraudulent. There's the introduction of malicious software. There are various fraud activities. And it's incredibly difficult to police. They're off. offshore, and I'm not, there's another aspect of this, you know, legitimate businesses who go run afoul of rules. Like there's a do not call list. And so you put your number on the do not call list. You know, enterprises are not supposed to contact you. And sometimes they go astray and they're not following the list. They're not subscribing. That we can fix. And we do. We find them. We identify them. We tell them they must. If they don't, we can find them. We can fix that. It's the illegal, nefarious stuff that's really hard. And it's growing. And as I said, it's an international problem. So we're working with agencies around the world. We are introducing measures using technology where we can. But it's really difficult because just as we move forward technically, so do the bad guys. So we didn't talk about that. And I just want to be sure people know that we do play a role in it. It's a huge problem and we are seized of it. But there's much work to do. I guess the takeaways are that what we do, we understand it's important to Canadians. Whether or not you have high quality broadband service, because you live a few miles outside of the major center is important. And we know that whether or not you, have available, whether you can truly find Canadian stories, whether the Canadian broadcasting system is sound, going into the future is really important. And so, you know, we're seized of those issues, and I want people to understand that. We have a $750 million broadband fund. We had a call out for the North, and now we have a call out for the rest of Canada. We will work on that as diligently as we can and get money out the door to extend broadband where we can. Government will do, and both provincial, municipal, and territorial will also do their part. On the consumer side, as I just said, it's important that we deal with the unsolicited communications and protect consumers, and that we are working on the pricing side. Yes, it's an issue. We understand that. So it's really those things. Look at like the big files we have in front of us. Canadians are sometimes frustrated because it's not happening fast enough or not where they live and somewhere else. I just want to make sure that Canadians understand, your listeners understand, that we're well aware of those challenges. We are working at it, and we do the best job we can.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Ian Scott, Chair of the CRTC, for sharing some of your thoughts, your challenges, your candor with us today. This is Bill Roberts, and this has been a CART.ca podcast. Cheers.